Hello, Fidel Evra here. I'm 37 years old. I'm from Cape Verde, Praia. My work is a mix of urban art / classic painting / screen printing, a mix of everything.
On this season of Hunger and Art, our program delves into the lives and creative practices of visual artists, writers, actors, and intellectuals from Portugal or living in Portugal, particularly those who have African heritage or hail from the Global South. In the spirit of past seasons, guest host Brian Perkins sets the stage for a unique conversation, featuring a wide range of creative practitioners and what they bring to contemporary art. Hunger and Art features thoughtful reflections and creative intervention. Hunger and Art, a place for conversation, experimentation, and research.
Hello, 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 hello. This is Brian Perkins, and this is Up From Art. Welcome back, listeners. Welcome back. I am still in Lisbon, Portugal, and I'm diving into what inspires artists here in this beautiful country full of hills and forests and oceans and rivers and beautiful people doing amazing things. And one of those beautiful people doing some of those amazing things is across from me today, Mr. Fidel Evra. Hopefully I didn't butcher your last name. I apologize if I did, but thank you for coming on the podcast, good brother.
Oh, you're welcome.
How's it going, man? It's like record temperatures outside.
Yeah, super hot. Hot outside.
Yeah, but you know what? Help me out here. Everybody still wears pants.
Yeah, me included.
Yeah, me too. Because I want to fit in.
Yeah,
I want to put on shorts, but I feel like the only people I see out there in shorts are kids. Like men here wear pants.
Yeah,
all temperatures.
Like real men.
Yeah, right.
Pants.
Pants.
Yeah,
that's what I feel like.
Yesterday was tough though, but because of the clouds, it had some crazy effects. Like, I don't know how you call it, like greenhouse effect maybe.
Yeah,
it was rough.
It's humid too. It's not just hot. Yes. Is this new? Is this feeling of humidity?
I don't know if it was as this bad. I can't remember. This just replaced all my feelings that I had from the previous years. But yeah, this was rough. Yesterday was rough. Today is okay because you can stay in the shadow. But yesterday was like oof.
Nah, I can't deal with it. Well, if I'm not in Oklahoma, I'm in Texas.
So this is hurts.
Texas is hot. Like Texas is like birds don't even fly in the sky.
Jesus.
In the middle of the day.
Just quit.
Yeah, right? They just wake up and just stay where they are.
Even the birds like, I'm out.
Yeah. Birds like, nah, I'm not flying today.
Yeah.
Burst into flames when I take off. Yeah.
It's just ashes.
Right. it just splutters.
The feathers become ashes.
So I'm trying to get into what inspires you to be the artist that you are. In your opening monologue, you mentioned three different forms of art.
Yeah.
Take me through the one you learned first, and why did you learn it? What inspired you to do that one first?
Okay, I think if we're talking about like art, it had to be graffiti. Before that, I draw all the time, even in college years. High school, I was like trying all the time through classes, but I remember the first time I saw, like, there was back in 98, maybe 97, maybe 97. There was this guy, he won like a huge contest in Portugal, like young artist something. They had all kinds of stuff like ballet, etc. And he won doing graffiti. He used to do like this really huge walls, like portraits. Actually, it was pretty good for the time. Even for today, it was like really good.
Okay.
He used to paint Bob Marley a lot.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. His name is Coleman. He still do some art now. And yes, I saw him on TV and was like amazed. Like people painting with spray cans on walls. And I remember the first time because he was on the, I was living in this neighborhood and he still lived there, like the next neighborhood, but we have I don't want to say forest, but it was like wilderness, like separating the both. So it wasn't easy to, people wouldn't communicate it this much. But I remember one day I went with some friends of mine. We went to that neighborhood to check some graffitis, and they just had a festival, graffiti festival.
A graffiti festival?
Yes.
Dope.
Inside the neighborhood.
Oh, wow.
And they were like writers from Lisbon. But at that time, I grew up in Barreiro. It's mm-hmm. across river.
Mm-hmm.
So at the time, I remember seeing like all these graffiti crews. They all went to that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
They were painting, doing bombings or whatever. It was like a maze.
Mm.
And I remember like the feeling that I had. I was like, this is like not Portugal. This seems like United States. And they were really good. They still are like good writers.
Mm-hmm.
And I fell in love. I went immediately start like drawing and tagging. I was watching a lot of, at the time we didn't have cable, but we had satellite.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to watch a lot of MTV. Mm-hmm. At that time, MTV, it didn't have much graffiti and much rap music.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a German channel called Viva, mm-hmm. and they used to pass like a lot of b-boy and stuff like that, and I used to record and stop just to watch the graffitis on the videos. Yes, like copying. yeah, it was a struggle. This was before internet, before everything,
before social media.
Yes, some guys had some magazines. We had a store here that used to sell like urban wear, mm-hmm. and they had everything, spray cans, magazines, everything.
Now, in the United States, graffiti for a long time, and still is in some parts, they view it as criminal.
Yeah.
Was it viewed the same way there? Were they viewing what you were doing or tagging or things as something as defacing property?
Yeah, it's a bit different. I have this thing that maybe somebody should talk about it. I'm not the best one to speak about it. But mm-hmm. I think in Europe, mural painting is seen like differently because there's a lot of like political stuff people used to paint here before the revolution here in 74. There were like a lot of like people doing murals. Actually, we just finished doing like this mural at Museo Mat.
Mm.
It was a homage to a mural that they did 48 years ago.
Mm.
Yes. I think it was a bit more than 48 years ago. They used to do a lot of murals to even like regular artists, like people that paint oil, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Before the revolution, they did a lot, and we just finished doing a mural. So I think here in Europe, mural painting is seen different. So when I think when you see like new generation doing like graffiti, people kind of like liked it. Mm-hmm. But after a while with the tagging, they were like, okay, this is get out of hand,
get
because
out
people
here.
Were tagging everything and windows, everything.
Yeah.
Just and people started like, this is not like, you're not, it's not political, it's just writing your name all over. Yeah, like,
fit
okay,
down.
Okay, enough, we don't want this. But at the beginning, yes, it was like, even now, if you like doing a mural, people would just enjoy it. And mm-hmm. Yes, I appreciate it.
From when you were little and then as you got older, from graffiti, how did things develop? Where did you go?
Yeah, yes, I started doing graffiti when I was on the eighth grade. No, before that, mm-hmm. fifth grade maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And then before I went to college, I didn't know what to do. I had some friends that said like, oh, you should try graphic design. You like to draw, etc. And you can also do illustration, etc. Mm-hmm. So I just went to graphic design, just didn't know what to do. And I was good at it. And I got a job, but I wasn't happy doing that thing. And right at that time, in 2001, this new genre, street art, starting to emerge. We had like a lot of artists from United States, Obey, from here, from France. Mm-hmm. We had a guy, a Portuguese guy, actually. I forgot his name, André, Mr. Mm-hmm. André. We had a lot of like really good artists doing like street art. And I caught that wave. I started doing street art, but after a while, I wasn't feeling fulfilled.
Okay.
I wanted a bit more. And around 2000 and let's say 13, I said like, okay, I will just do more like art stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much like street art.
And what were some of the things that you were diving into with the art stuff?
It's crazy because since I didn't have like formal art school, mm-hmm. I didn't know what to do. I was just like thinking and looking around. I started reading a lot. Actually, that's where all of my inspiration comes from reading.
Really? Okay.
So I was reading a lot, picking like sometimes I would read this character and I was being inspired by the specific character. Mm-hmm. I would think like, oh, how would, if I had to create this person, how would they would be? Mm-hmm. So I started creating that. And after a while, I was just mixing like different stories and philosophy and stuff like mm-hmm. that. And that's how my language developed. Like it's a mix of different fictional stuff, with historical gotcha. Stuff, with philosophy. It's a mix of everything.
Do you have, do you come from an artistic family?
I don't think so. My brother loved to draw. That's mm-hmm. where I got the drawing thing mm-hmm. through my youth. And so I think that's it. Maybe mm-hmm. I think my father also liked to draw, but he never shared that with us.
Right. Did you feel like you had the support of, you know, family and friends when you're like, hey, I'm gonna go down this path?
Nah, I was just not the guy that was doing that. If I wasn't doing like outlaw criminal stuff, uh-huh. my mom wouldn't care. but I think just a couple of years ago she saw like I took her to this exhibition that I did, and it was like a huge thing, and I think since then she's like, okay, this is like serious,
it can really
be. Yes, just a couple of years ago, because before that she was like, just get your job, just do your thing, don't.
How did you try to explain to her, yay, I have a passion for this,
yeah, I want to do know. This, mom. I was just like, I want to buy some stuff. I need to buy some materials to do whatever. And she's like, okay, you're going to spend money on that? Okay. And every time I want to, it was like that. It wasn't like, she wasn't supportive, but she mm-hmm. was like, okay. But remember, this is not good. This is just a...
like a hobby.
A hobby, yes.
Yeah.
But after I took her to a couple of exhibitions, she was like, okay, this is like... can go somewhere, is good at it.
Do you guys have conversations now? Like,
nah. No, but I have this, I have my nephew, mm-hmm. and she's always like prompting me up, like, hey, Fidel, look at uncle's exhibition, yeah, yeah. etc. She takes him, she, yeah.
Oh, I love that. Nice.
That's, yeah.
I love that, because yeah. it's like you're inspiring the next generation.
Yeah,
of your family.
Yeah.
And then what was the second form of art you jumped into, and then what made you jump?
The second?
Or like the next major form of art that you were experimented with?
I always wanted to work with screen prints, but since it's like a mechanical thing mm-hmm. and I didn't have access to it, I couldn't. But the moment that I started working with it, I learned that, okay, because before that I used to do like regular portraits. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I spent like 2 hours, 3 hours doing a portrait. But I always feel like I wanted to introduce more into more something more like performative, you know, mm. like movements. Mm-hmm. I want to work and do to paint, etc. Mm-hmm. The problem with that, if you're doing portraits and mixing performative with portraits, is either you're just doing whatever and it's like whatever, or you have to be super careful, then destroy it. But then it's like you're faking it because you're like carefully destroying it, and I didn't yeah. like that. What I like with screen print is because I can just print like 10 or whatever, mm-hmm. or 50, and then through water, paints, and then I will start like individually work on them.
Gotcha.
And after, if I do something that I really like, I say, okay, I like this thing. I will just repeat it and see what it takes, mm-hmm. where it takes me. Then after a while, I have like a series that I really love, and that's why I call my, yeah.
What part of art do you call home? Like, oh, this is where I live. Mm. I'm gonna do this. 60-year-old me is gonna be doing this.
I think with it had to be something like where I can think. I don't know. I think I would say like to construct to create an idea. I would say that more than just make the idea. Mm-hmm. But since this last piece that I did, that it's at MAT Museum, I really fell in love with it. It's like a mix of different medias. It has painting, it mm. has video, and it has music.
Oh wow.
Yes. So I think in the future that's where my work is adding to mm-hmm. something more like where
so very interdisciplinary
work. Yes, yes, and it can interact with people. Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
I could see just a little bit of a kind of like a spark in your eye in that moment mm-hmm. when you're just about to get into who you're trying to reach. You're mm-hmm. like, yo, I want people to feel it this way. Mm-hmm. What about getting people to feel your message resonates with you the most? What about that makes you feel? Mm. If you see somebody going past your installation or art mm-hmm. or whatever, what is that? What feeling does that create inside of you?
It's kind of new, actually, because before this last exhibition, I had some pieces that people really loved it, but the reach wasn't that big. Mm-hmm. So I would come, people would come say, oh, this is really nice, etc. Because I kind of did this thing that I have. I did something similar in 2020, mm-hmm. in December. It was a bit more like, I say, more simple. Mm-hmm. There's like a small TV and people loved it. Mm-hmm. But my reach was really small. Mm-hmm. It was after this that like every day people would come like tagging me and sending me like, this is beautiful. And after a while I said, okay, maybe I start like feeling it. Like, mm-hmm. you know, people really like this. I should respect it. Mm-hmm. And should take my time to, like, if somebody wants to ask questions, etc. Yes.
Does any of that feedback mm. from viewers and people that love your art, does any of that feedback increase your passion for it? Or mm. are you just sitting here already like, hey, whether you like it or not, I'm gonna still be doing it.
This stuff, because I know that sometimes it's like, a lot of people have talked about it. Some artists, they have like a period where they're doing the same stuff, but somehow it connects with everybody and people love it. Mm. After I said 10 years or after a period, you can do the same stuff, but it doesn't, I don't know. It's like when you have a cloud that moved mm. and something changed, mm-hmm. it's weird. Right now people are loving it and I'm super glad, but let's see in the future. I know in the future that I want to explore a bit more. Mm-hmm. So maybe my work will move with people, you know. Mm-hmm. Maybe.
If your work does move with people, where would you like to see it go? Would you like to do mm-hmm. more work in the States? Would you like to just be around Europe more? Would you like to bring more of your style and flavor back home to Cape Verde?
Maybe. I think everybody when they are born, they have like two legs just to walk, to spread around mm-hmm. the world. So if I can, what I would like to do is like to take all the flavors and the culture from Cape Verde mm-hmm. and in Portugal too, like mm-hmm. a mix, and just spread it around the world and mm-hmm. so people can enjoy it, you know?
And give me some of those Cape Verde flavors.
Oh, it's like very, what I introduce in my work is like very folklorish, like story tales. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stories. There's a thing in Cape Verde, people say like contar parte, like telling bits. Mm. So if we translate the word for word, like telling bits, mm. like can be funny, it can be like mm-hmm. Knowledge, something with knowledge, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And somehow there's like things, pieces of that, those stories that if you amplify it to a bigger audience, mm-hmm. it can really resonate to people, you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, and Cape Verde is super tiny, it's like 500,000 people.
Oh, really?
Yeah, super tiny. 10 islets. There's more That's people right, around islands. The world mm-hmm. than in Cape Verde. And there's some famous American singers that are from Cape Verde, like really? Left Eye.
Left Eye was from Cape Verde?
Yes, yes.
Really?
Her name is like, if you look her name, it's like, I forgot the name. Like a regular, you would know, you really? Will know this. If you read her name, it was like, okay, this is not like American. Oh. She's not from IT.
Oh, wow.
Asian, yeah.
I never would, oh no.
Left Eye. Really? And Amber Rose, mother, she's off converting also.
Amber Rose?
Yes. And wow. I think there's a couple more people.
Wow.
500,000 people.
So I want to just dig into Cape Verde because mm-hmm. I feel like it, because it has such a big influence on your art. Mm-hmm. Like you said, it's part of your drive. It's part of your passion. Food.
Yeah.
Cape Verde. Mm-hmm. Best beaches. Cape Verde. Mm-hmm. Best places to go.
Yeah.
Cape Verde. Growing up, what was that? Where did you go? What did you do?
I didn't go far because we came here. When I came, we were super young.
Oh,
I was like two. Mm-hmm. But I went there a couple of times. So I kind of remember the places. Mm-hmm. I have to go again, actually. Mm-hmm. I should go, but yeah, but I still have some memories from from there.
I love that.
Yeah,
I love that. And how have you mixed it now into Portugal? What memories are you making here in Portugal that add to the passion that you have to continue to create this art? What are some of those memorable moments here? Like, you had a top five.
Oof, top five memorable moments. It's tough. It has to be like family stuff because Caribbean people, they are super close, tight with culture and stuff. Like the food, like every weekend we have cachupa, and cachupa is like a traditional Caribbean food. And close, very tied to the music and everything. For example, you can see on other countries like Angola, Mozambique, like the popular music, it's like kind of like a mix of pop influence of American and pop with influence with American traditional music, but covered is super tight. You see people still play with guitars and cavaquinho, etc. It's super like, and the music is still like really good. So I think it has to be like memories. It has to be like things like family stuff. With we always speak Creole in our house.
Oh wow!
So it has to be something like that.
I think in the States, Creole is something that is, it's unique to New Orleans.
Yeah, New Orleans, yes.
New Orleans population. But that Creole is not the same.
No, it's not the same.
You're talking about, yeah.
I know that there's the language, some islands. I forgot which islands there are. Because there's this language called Papiando. It's a mix of Creole from, I don't know if it's Cafe, but it's a mix from Creole around like the colonies of Portuguese people and mix in America. It's close to States, close to IT.
Okay.
But I have to check. The language is Papiando.
Papiando.
Yes.
Okay. And even when I lived in Costa Rica, the whole eastern side of that country is all Creole. Well, it's all black. It's all you and I.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Spanish and then Creole. Do you take pride in your cultural differences from Portugal, but do you find it hard to live in Portugal sometimes, knowing that some of your traditions and customs and even, you know, like original language and lineage comes from someplace different?
I never felt that. I have to admit, maybe if I was from Angola or some person like that, I would feel that, because Angola, they have like a really strong, like even like tribal, like culture. It's like Angola is huge, and they have like language that has no relation with Portuguese, and etc. Like Kimbundo, etc. Mozambique, same. Guinea-Bissau. But Cape Verde, I think, is a bit more diluted. So it's even though we are really tied to our stuff, we can live. It's like, when you are on Cape Verde, you are in Cape Verde. Like people, everybody speaks Creole, etc. Even here, and people have like food, etc. So I don't feel like I'm losing, because again, it's a tiny country, like 500,000 people. So everybody's spread around the world. In Boston, there's a huge community.
I ran into a guy the other day at a store, and he has family in like Dorchester. So random. He's like, "You have a Boston number." I was like, "How do you know that?"
Yeah,
you know, because we exchange numbers, because it's like I'm trying to learn Portuguese. And he's the nicest guy in the world. He's like, "Give me your number." And he's like, "You have a Boston number." I'm like, "How do you know that?" And he's like, "I have family in Boston." It's like, there's a huge Cape Verde population in Boston. Really? So in the States, because we've had a civil rights movement and all that, and Jim Crow and all this other nonsense that has worked against us sometimes. Now, as a people struggling sometimes, some parts of the population struggling for identity, sometimes when it comes to certain professions, you'll hear some African Americans say, "Well, I don't want to be labeled a black author. I want to be labeled an author. I don't want to be labeled a black artist. I want to be labeled an artist." What are your thoughts on that, on this side of the pond, on this side of the ocean? Would you consider yourself black artist? Do you not pay in any mind?
Yeah, I think that's like a general, I don't want to say generational thing, but I feel what you're saying. There's some people here that feel the same thing, but I think it's more like a generation, because I know that me and my brothers, my sister is like 2 years, one and a half year younger than me, and my brother is 7 years. So we were all born in Cape Verde. We never felt that. Mm-hmm. That's like a new feeling, like people like just want to be accepted. Mm-hmm. But I think what they should do, I don't know, even artists here or in the United States, they should just try to go to Africa and see if they liked it or not. And mm-hmm. after that, they will embrace it. Like, okay, I'm this. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like there's a lot of people that... I understand it because there's this thing like, what am I? I'm American, mm-hmm. I'm African-American, mm-hmm. I'm African. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing with when people talk about African music, like what should be considered African music? Like all the music that's made in Africa, or should like the music that's made in United States mm-hmm. also be considered African music because mm-hmm. it's the diaspora? Mm-hmm. I think people should just try to, instead of like, try to rationalize. During the pandemic, I used to spend a lot of time in Clubhouse. Mm-hmm. And there was this big debate, like what Americans are, like, should they be like African Americans or they are something else, like mm-hmm. a new thing. There was this girl mm-hmm. arguing like, she's not African because she has mixed. Like, it doesn't work like that. Come on, like, I know what you're trying to say, but it doesn't work like that. Just because you are like a mix from Irish, it doesn't make you like you're a quarter Irish. You're not, you're just African. And I think some people just, they should just do their, like, there was just generation the 60s, they like to go to India to have their nirvanas. So mm-hmm. some people, they should just go, like Kendrick Lamar, is in Congo right now. Should just go and meet people and see, like, if you like it. Because some people, they have, like, this distorted image of Africa. Like, all the things that you see in media, that's the Africa. Mm-hmm. I think they should just go there and meet and see, like, the cities, like, people like, because they will, people like the same stuff. It's, like, intuitive. Everybody likes the same stuff. It's amazing.
I think, well, I know there's a distinction between geographically where you're from mm. and ethnically where you're from.
In Africa?
Just everywhere.
Ah, right? Yeah.
You know, it's like,
yes, where you're from. Here in Europe, it's there's a lot of like different ethnicities.
Yeah, there's a lot of different ethnicities, but then there's only so many continents and there's only so many countries. Mm-hmm. So I think black, nobody can see my air quotes listening. It's like black has just been this universal term.
Yeah.
But there's a culture associated with mm-hmm. it. If I were to say, okay, you're a black artist, mm-hmm. what would you say is the culture behind that for you?
Yeah.
It would be representative of what culture?
It had to be, it's not that I think this way, but if I had to explain to the world, it would be like, all others see me. Mm. Like, to me, it's not important, but it's like how in Europe people see me, how in United States people see me. It's like that. But what matters, like how we see each other, you mm-hmm. know? We have, there's a thing here in Europe. I kind of understand, like, in America, it's different. When people, I think it's a generational thing also. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. People, when they see each other, like, oh, you're from Angola. This guy's Angolan. This guy's São Tomense. Some people be like, how can you distinguish, like, oh, but he was born here. Like, no, he's from Angola. He's from, even people that have like a father from Angola and a mother from mm-hmm. Cape Verde, they have this thing like, you're from Angola because you look like Angola, you know? Mm-hmm. And in America, it's a bit tough because there's the racism, right? They just erase everything.
Yeah.
Some people just have to go and find yourself.
Yeah.
Like, just try to visit. Just try to go to Congo. Mm-hmm. It's
make your own pilgrimage.
Yes.
And, you know,
you want to have that thing like, what am I American, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Just go. Because in America, Irish people, white people say that I'm Irish.
Yeah.
Proudly, like, I'm Irish. I'm blah, blah, blah.
I'm German.
Yeah.
Italian.
Why the African... African folks have to be like, oh, I'm socially. Well.
I feel that.
Yeah.
We had Angelo Torres on, and he said, you know, it's like, I'm not ashamed for everything that has gone on in the past. I'm not ashamed of descendants of slaves, and, you know, not ashamed of that. Like, he's like, I would play those roles if mm-hmm. I was still, because he's an actor. I would play those roles today mm-hmm. if they were offered to me. He's like, I'm not ashamed. I want to tell that story.
Yeah.
What type of story are you trying to tell for the future with your art? Mm. We're gonna close it out with that. Like, Oosh. Where are you going with it? What types of stories do you want to continue to tell?
It has to be like this knowledge that somehow people convert this tiny island close to Africa in the middle of the ocean. Has because I think everybody has this intuitive knowledge of how things, what things are and how people are, etc. Mm-hmm. And Cabo Verde has this particular thing because it's, again, it's a mix of European with Africans. Even inside Cabo Verde, there's some, I don't want to say conflict, but some things that the legacy that mm-hmm. of that period. But somehow people have a knowledge like how to see the world and how things are.
Mm-hmm.
And Cabo Verde is really big in, it's not big in painting, but it's big in theatrical.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's knowledge there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what I would like to spread, like the mm-hmm. Cabo Verdean knowledge and the Cabo Verdean way of see the world.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Nice. Fidel, thank you for coming on. Oh, I appreciate you.
Okay.
Where can people find you? Where can people see what you do, you know, be immersed in your art? How can they do that?
The easiest way, just on Instagram is where I'm more active, mm-hmm. Fidel Evra, or my webpage, fidelevra.com.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two easiest way. Or just type my name. There's not many Fidel Evras.
Especially in the States, guys.
Yes, yeah.
Probably not, man. Yeah. Cool. I will put those links in thank the show you. Notes. Man, again, I want to thank you. You know, I get to go across the ocean and talk to one of my brothers and learn a little bit about,
nice.
You know, the art that I love so much.
Nice.
Appreciate you.
Nice, nice. Good.
Hunger and Art Podcast. Produced by Hunger Center of Artistic Research. Guest host, Bryant Perkins. Narrated by Anka Ushurelo. Music provided by Universal. For more information about Hangar, check out our Instagram at Hangar_CIA. That's Hangar, Hangar_CIA. Or check out our website, hangar.com.pt.